Lemire grew up in foster care because her father killed her mother. She was placed with 13 different families before she turned 18, and when she was with her first foster family, she was molested. But she didn't report it because she wanted to stay there. She wanted to stay there to protect her little sister, to make sure the offender didn't get to her. As a teenager, she was caught with a weapon and sent to juvenile detention. And here's where the story takes a twist. At 18, Angel ages out of foster care. On her first day that she's legally an adult, they open the door and she walks out of juvie with a mission. She wants to get her little sister and shoot her father for killing her mother. That's the plot of a new film called Night Comes On. This is a powerful story written and directed by Jordana Spiro. It's her first feature film. The screenplay was co-written with Angela Nwando with the Sundance Institute's Directors Lab. Now, actress and director Jordana Spiro is best known for her roles in My Boys, Mob Doctor, and the current Netflix hit Ozark. She's a New Yorker, born and raised, and she studied at the Circle in the Square Theater in New York and earned her MFA in filmmaking from Columbia. The Night Comes On opens in theaters tomorrow. Jordana, welcome to Midday.
Thank you so much for having me.
And I think I've been saying your name wrong, but it's Jordana.
Jordana, right? Yeah. And my co-writer is Angelica Nwando.
Nwando, okay. So this is a fictional story, completely fictional, mm-hmm. But it feels so real. Are the characters based on real people?
No, they're not. Angelica and I both pulled from, a lot of different emotional places for the both of us. And then certainly she brought in some very specific details of what it's like to grow up in foster care. But they're completely fictionalized. The two characters are.
So this was part of a school project for you.
Yeah, well, it started a little bit before that. I was an actor out in LA, and was feeling like I was in a bit of a crossroads in my life. Like I was feeling like I just wasn't finding enough purposefulness in the work that I was doing. And I started to get very lost, and I guess you could even say a little bit depressed about that. And I started to just feel so hungry for purpose, to wake up and know what you were going to do with yourself. And at the same time, I was volunteering with this organization called Peace for Kids, this nonprofit that works with foster youth out in LA. And there I learned a lot about what it means to age out of foster care. And I started to wonder, how on God's earth I'm feeling lost like this, and I have all these safety nets around me and all these support systems by, the very nature of the color of my skin to the way I grew up to the family structure I have, all of these different things. How is it that these kids have so much resiliency that they can face their own feelings of lostness without any of that, and without any, in most instances, really adequate means to resolve the trauma that they experienced that put them in the foster care in the first place. And so it was really out of admiration that I wanted to set the story within the setting of somebody aging out.
You have a lot of interesting choices that you make here. By the way, we have over 400,000 children in the foster care mm-hmm. system in America right now. Mm-hmm. And this is an area that not a lot of people focus on. Mm-hmm. Your characters are two women of color. They're, mm-hmm. well, two girls of color, two black, one an 18-year-old and another a 10-year-old mm-hmm. girl. Why did you make that choice? And I might add that, the main character, she has a romantic relationship with a woman. I'm not sure if she's gay or not, mm-hmm. but you made these choices. Why?
Well, that one, making her black was a difficult choice for me because I'm not black. But at the same time, it felt like the right choice for a variety of reasons. First, when I was around the kids that I was around, the nonprofit is based in Compton, so it just so happened that the kids that were there were predominantly black. Angelica is black, and the foster care system is very unfortunately very disproportionately black. So it it felt in some ways wrong to make her white. But then at the same time, of course, that's fraught for me because there's so much misrepresentation. And I would have, and I felt a big responsibility to get that right. So, you know, that being said, I don't know that I would have ultimately written the script if I hadn't have found such a wonderful writing partner with Angelica.
And why did you choose Angelica? What's her unique experience?
Well, you know, so I had this idea of this story in my mind. And then when I moved to New York, or I should say back to New York, because I'm from New York, to go to Columbia, this story stuck with me. And I kept developing it and developing it to a kind of a treatment outline kind of a place. And then when I went to start writing it, I felt like, you know, again, just speaking about being responsible, I felt irresponsible writing it myself. That I wouldn't be able to truly understand if I was getting the nuances or the subtext of things right.
Why is your co-writer so uniquely qualified?
Well, so I reached out to Peace for Kids and I said, would you, you know, help me match up with a young woman who's recently aged out who could speak to this experience firsthand of aging out? A sort of bizarre coincidence was that I had named the character Angel when he said, you should meet Angelica Wandu. Mm. And she had recently aged out of foster care. And he had known her because she had participated in a lot of the programs at Peace for Kids. Also, at the same time, she was writing a lot of poetry about her foster care experience, about her experience within foster care. And so when we met, we talked a lot about what we wanted to do as storytellers, what we wanted to express, and we just felt like we really hit it off. And so from there, it just became a partnership. And then, you know, with any writing partnership, you're just bringing in so much of yourself into the whole process.
And a lot of her is in this work.
Sure, sure.
If you're just joining us, I'm talking with Jordana Spiro about her new film, Night Comes On. Now, Dominic Fishback from The Deuce and newcomer Tatum Marilyn Hall, they star as the sisters in this film. They're both wonderful. What about them made you say they are perfect for this role?
Starting with Dominique. Dominique is a, I think, a phenomenal actress. She wrote and was performing a one-woman show called Subverted, where she played 22 different characters.
22?
Yeah, so when I went to see it, I thought, well, God, one of them's got to be Angel. you know, she has this ability. So she's, you know, has this incredible range, of course, as you can just imagine from that. And then our casting director was a huge fan of hers as well. So a lot of signs were pointing to Dom. But what she has is, you know, she has one of those faces that can transmit so much, and so much of Angel is played in silence. She's such a guarded character. She shields herself so much that we needed to know that through that tough veneer was somebody who was very intelligent, who was very sensitive, who had a lot of love inside of her. That there was a real kind of poetry that lived inside of her. So that way we didn't just see her for this potential criminal act that she's going to commit, but that it stems from this kind of pain and heartbreak that's inside of her. And she just has that face and those eyes and that soul that you just can watch her and you just feel all of that stuff coming through. And then Tatum had never acted before. She was 9 years old.
She's pretty amazing.
I know. She's extraordinary. And we met her at a step competition in the Bronx. We did a very extensive casting search. because she has to have this incredible range. And she just, you know, with every audition, you know, we really put her through the paces. And with every audition, she just came in and just got better and better and better and just exhibited more and more and more ability to jump in and out of, you know, the vulnerability that she needs to have and the toughness that she needs to have and the humor. You know, she is the, she is Angel's life force. You know, she's the antidote.
Some of the writing is truly beautiful. You have this one line that sticks with me where your main character says, "Anybody can see the sunset, but it takes a motivated person to see the sunrise." When you were writing that, what were you thinking?
Well, you know, that it was trying to find within one sentence a way to capture the mother. And in capturing the mother, a way to show that there's something inside of these girls that's going to make them okay. A drive, an ability to take charge of their own life, because nobody's going to come in and help them. And so I just felt like if the mother was a kind of person who seized the day, who had energy and vitality, that we would know that that's inside of those girls too, and that even though they've been knocked down, it's in their DNA because of their mother. And so that was just, that just, you know, sprung to me this idea of like, who, you know, that person that just gets up early to participate in life.
What do you make of, I mean, this is such a unique world. We spoke about it briefly earlier, about the fact that she's in, she's in this sort of lesbian relationship, but she's so young. But that's not a central part of it. It just happens to be part of this story. Why did you make that choice?
You know, it's kind of funny because it why I made that choice initially changed. Initially, it was because I did notice with some of the young women, and I say some, I'm not making any generalization or anything like that, young women that I met, that there was, first of all, with any teenager, there's a lot of exploration about your, you know, within your sexual identity. But then, you know, within this, these foster youth, I did notice a lot of young women were exploring this path because perhaps their relationships were with men were so terrible. But I didn't want to, but I stepped away. That was sort of the initial spark for that. But ultimately I stepped away from that because I think it seems to me that within the LGBTQ community right now, what needs to be understood is that you don't actually need a reason, that you just are. And so that was very important to me, that that just became a detail about her that was just a given, and it didn't need to be addressed, and it didn't need to be belabored, and there didn't need to be a reason for it.
That's what made it so unique, that it was, there was no reason for it. It just was a fact, like the sun rising. Now, according to the Center for the Study of Women in Television and Film, women made up only 18% of leadership roles in the top 250 films of 2017. What do you think is causing that gender gap? And do you think films like yours will help close it?
Oh, well, you're more of an optimist than me. you know, I think, you know, that's a difficult question. I'd like to think that we're in a moment of change. I don't know that we are. I don't know that the numbers are reflecting it yet. You know, thank goodness for people like Ava DuVernay and what she's doing with Queen Sugar and all of these kinds of things. I think that there's that, you know, creating real change in the moment, in the present, and it's incredible. I think the one of the issues is that we don't allow, and I don't, it's cultural or systemic, I don't know what it is, but we don't allow stories where women are the leads to be universal. that they still remain in this kind of subcategory. You know, that the default setting for a universal story is still, you know, white man's story. And I think until we allow ourselves to let any story be universal, regardless of if the lead character looks like you or not, then I think we're going to constantly have a disparity, because then that, if, you know, if it can't be seen as a mainstream film, then it's harder to get funding. And if it's harder to get funding, there's less of those films, and, you know, and so on and so forth.
There's so many filmmakers in this city and so many who listen to us. You once offered some advice about making a film. You said, don't wait until you're fully ready, because you'll never feel fully ready. You still believe that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's, I think you have to jump in, because there's so much learning that's just going to happen by, you know, trial by fire. So you have to jump in.
So you're an actress and a lot of people know you. You're famous. The second season of Ozark on Netflix is coming out in the fall. What can you tell us about the new season?
Well, I can say that it's even more exciting than the first. There's some great characters introduced. You know, I'm not allowed to talk too much about it, except to say that it's really dark and really exciting.
Well, I'm hooked. I can't wait to see it. And what about future work?
Just exploring ideas now and, you know, playing with different things. And I really look forward to being able to come back and tell you about them. And I'm having a lot of fun right now playing with ideas that, you know, play with much larger landscapes, just visual kind of landscapes and everything. So that's been a lot of fun for me to explore new ideas, but still in that development mode.
Any big topics in mind?
You know, I'm not quite ready to talk about them just
okay.
yet.
But I respect
thank you
that.
So much for giving me the opportunity to have a platform to talk about them.
The film, again, was really extraordinary. And I don't want to sort of invite any comparisons, and I don't want to do any spoilers because the end is a surprise. But when you looked back at the final product, and I know it had been years in the making, did you say, yes, it is exactly the way I wanted it? Or was there something you wanted that is not in the film?
I feel a kind of a deep satisfaction that I don't know I felt before. I really feel like I said what I wanted to say with it, and I really feel like I love these two characters. I feel so indebted to the team that was around me to help this film get made. And I just feel like I'm very proud of what we all did together.
I was so wrapped up in the story that I didn't sort of have a checkbox for all the characters, but it seems like the majority of the characters in your movie are non-white. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that was just sort of the environment and the locations where it was shot. Where was it shot?
All over the place, actually. It was shot, most of the exteriors were shot in Philadelphia. And then a lot of the interiors were shot out in Staten Island, just for the simple fact of, like, you know, the tax incentive, blah, 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 that you know, kept us shooting in New York, and then a little bit out in Jersey. So it was quite a road trip of a film.
And we only have a couple more seconds, but is there one part that you fought for, saying this has to be in the movie?
You know, no, I feel like the people that surrounded me were really supportive of everything that we wanted to do. So I'm really lucky in that sense.
Fantastic. Thank you so much
Thank
for joining
you.
Me. Great work.
Thank you very much for having me.
And I'm Duarte Geraldino, and I've been speaking with filmmaker Jordana Spiro, and she's discussing her new feature, Night Comes On.